This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Dead air, that's not good. Like, why do I have dead air? It's not supposed to be like that.
Yeah, you don't have dead air, baby.
I don't.
You got me.
I'm not supposed to have you. I was supposed to have this.
Oh.
This is my new walk-up. This is my new walk-up music.
Okay.
Hold on.
Yeah, I'm listening.
It's like, it's a little gangster music.
Are you ready? Oh, is you ready?
Ready.
You say you ready?
Oh,
whole squad ready.
Ready.
Is you ready?
Oh,
are you ready?
Ready.
Is you ready? Whole squad ready.
We came here to see Jet. What you got?
Oh,
no, no, no.
Not on my watch.
I heard this on the Major League Baseball promo the other night. And I thought.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought I got to listen to that. So I did.
What you got?
Yeah.
I do, I like it.
I'm going to the top.
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
You know what time it is, right? They don't want us to make it, so it's time to take it.
Rhyme with them killers, it's time to see who be willing.
Yeah, if you roll around in your Cadillac listening to that, bobbing your head, right, with your shades on.
You're in the front row, baby.
You'll be straight up legit.
Mm. No question.
Midwest gangbanger. 70-year-old white gangbanger.
Yeah, in my Honda with the license plate that says, my bad.
There you go.
That's true.
That'll make you absolutely legit. The, well, all right, first of all, you guys get rid of your snow, or do you still have snow on the ground up in North Dakota?
Oh, my God, it was 72 degrees yesterday.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That's
no,
awesome.
It was in the 70s.
That's awesome.
74 or 76. It was warm yesterday. I had all the windows and the doors open to the patio. It was gorgeous.
That's
of course,
awesome.
Now it's in the 40s today. We're back to normal, which is fine.
Is your grill put away for the winter, or did, like, when it gets 72, do you say, let me bust that thing out, let's go? Can you do it that quick? Or
cover off and cook myself some hot dogs. No, it's tucked away. It's got the cover on for the year.
Really?
Because I put
Come
it on just
before. Why? Why would you shut it down so hard? I mean, why wouldn't it be able to be, like, fired up? Because you know the weather's going to be like this for a while.
You know as well as I do, as long as you've lived here.
Yes.
That was just a little trip teaser of warm weather. Because we both know what's coming. And coming hard. So, I'm just like the Boy Scouts, being prepared.
I don't like that you shut it down that hard. That you, like, drop the iron curtain on it. I think you should like do a soft shutdown where you could, like, pull the cover off. You know, kind of like the Lone Ranger when he got on his horse. You know, what's his name?
2 years ago, I did that.
Trigger.
Trying to be Butch.
Here we go.
No, it's just I'm just saying it didn't work.
It didn't.
No, it's
so when you shut it down.
We had a little warm up. We had a little warm up in early December.
Yeah.
To where the snow melted off my grill, and I threw that cover on so damn fast. I still had snow on the deck.
So when you shut it down, what does it entail? You shut the gas off and you put the lid on. Is that it?
I put the cover. I've got a Weber cover. Yeah.
Well, yank that thing off and get that thing going, man. That's nothing. That thing's not shut down.
No, I know. I just don't have any interest now.
Oh, really?
Let me blunt.
All right. Now, you know what? I can accept that. Okay.
My grilling is done for the summer. I had a great summer.
I can't accept that.
And I just don't want to do it anymore.
No, I don't believe that for a second. I grilled two fillets last night and a ribeye, and big fat Chernobyl asparagus. You know how to get people to try asparagus? You wrap bacon around it, okay?
That's right. Oh, yeah. And throw it on the grill? Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Throw it on your
bacon around. Bacon around like three or four asparagus? Come on, man. It was ridiculous. It tastes great. Got a little crunch on the bacon, too, so that made it even better. So that was good. Cool. And then a little stuffed jalapeno with, some cream cheese with a little heat in it. Yes?
Yeah.
All that off the grill. And you tell me that, yeah, I'm done with it. I don't want to do it. Give me a break. I don't believe that. I don't believe that. Don't come on this program and start talking shit like that. Yeah. You want me to get butch? I'll get butch. No, but don't come on my show and think you're going to out-butch me. My name is Butch.
Hey, it's your party, Leslie Gore, and you can bitch if you want.
Exactly.
Now you're forcing me to pull my grill off.
I just know that you love to eat and you love to grill and you have great grill recipes. And so I'm not buying this. Yeah. I can buy that. I don't want to fight the snow on my balcony, blah, 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 blah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So anyway, hold on. Email for you. Hey, Mac, ask the chef if he's got a good recipe for a bean hot dish. I know the upper Midwest is famous for them. I spent a little time there. I'm heading to something this weekend. Does he have any recipe for me? So, yes, no?
If a baked bean hot dish.
I guess.
But,
I don't know.
But what I would do is, I would get black beans, navy beans.
No, not a, beans. When I think of beans, now he doesn't elaborate in this, but I'm thinking of the green bean hot dish with what?
Oh.
Mushroom soup and then the onion things on top of it, that one.
Okay, here we go.
I love that one.
You get your green beans, if you make your own cream of mushroom soup or open a can of Campbell's or Progresso, with a little, and use cream, do not, or half and half, do not, or whole milk at the worst. I like it a little richer. And you mix all that up.
That seems to be a trend with you.
Yeah. And slice some mushrooms, the extra if you want. But then you lay it in a casserole dish, and then you get tater tot. And you take tater tots.
Wait a minute.
You line it up on top of this mixture.
Did you just say tater tots?
Tater tots. I'm going rogue on you. I'm going hot fish Midwest. And you get tater tots and then, you take this, three cheese blend. You sprinkle it over the top of that. You can throw it in the oven and bake it until it bubbles on the side. Or if you're in a hurry, you heat the fixing up, the beans, the soup. You do it all. Put it in a baking dish, a greased baking dish, by the way, with butter or Crisco or olive oil.
Butter.
And then butter is better. And then you lay that out. Then you lay your tater tots. I mean tightly. So it's just, you had looked like a tater tot tabletop. Okay?
Whoa. And then you sprinkle wait. Say that again? Say that again? Tater tot tabletop?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So it's solid tater tots you don't see.
Don't try to say that when you're drunk. It ain't happening.
I ain't drunk yet, so. That's why I can say it. And then you sprinkle the cheese over as much as you want. You put it in the oven until the cheese melts. You cover, take it out, cover it with foil, and race to wherever you're going with this tater tot hot dish. And that would drive them wild. It'll probably be the first thing to go because that green bean casserole. And if you want to get real bold and innovative,
yes,
you saute some bacon off and you chop it up, saute some bacon, and mix it in with the green beans and the cream of mushroom soup. And then that'll make it spectacular because you and I both love meat.
Bacon. Bacon makes everything better. Name one thing that bacon doesn't make better.
Bacon makes everything better.
Vanilla ice cream. Vanilla ice cream, maybe. But
that's a quick, easy, if you're going to a party where you have to bring a dish.
Yes.
And that is 100% pure Midwestern hot dish.
That is straight up. And everybody loves tater tots. Loves tater tots, and the green bean casserole is a staple. Any like potluck you ever go to, you will see the dish that Kim just went through there.
And you can put tater tots on just about anything, and it brings it to another level of decadence.
tater tot
decadence.
You know what? That'd be kind of interesting. Great tater tot recipes. I got an email earlier in the week from somebody who listened to an episode that you mentioned that you don't cook with salted butter. And their question was, how much salt does salted butter have? So
that's a good question.
Is the taste? Is the
it
taste?
It has enough salt in it to taste it.
Oh, it does.
Yes, it's not a lot, but it has enough to taste it. And the reason I don't use salted butter because I like to add my own salt if I'm going to add salt to something. And I think in the restaurant, the way I approached it was I want it to be taste a certain way. And if people want to salt and pepper their food, knock yourself out. If you notice when you go into a restaurant the next time, when somebody gets their food put down in front of them, watch them grab the salt shaker and start shaking before they even taste. And for me, that makes me crazy.
Why?
Because taste the goddamn food before you don't even know what it tastes like.
Okay, so how about this?
Maybe I added salt.
Said this before, and it bothers me because I do that.
Yeah, well, that's you're wrong.
What? What did you just say? My headset just screwed up. I thought I heard you say you're wrong.
Yeah, because you should taste your food before you salt and pepper it.
What are you like? You're like the food national socialist now? You're the food Nazi? Like what? Here's what I do.
If you want me to be Max, I'm the food Nazi.
Okay, you're the salt Nazi. Okay, so I know certain dishes I like more salt on. For instance, my mom makes this rice dish. It is consomme, beef broth, and then you a can of that, a half a stick of butter, and you bring that to a boil. You dump a cup of rice in, and you let it simmer for 45 minutes till the rice is done. 45 minutes, the rice absorbs everything. It's delicious. Okay. I know that needs, I like it with a little bit more salt on it. So I remember you said this before, and I remember like putting rice on my plate and then salting it before I eat it. And I heard you in my head, people that salt food before they taste it piss me off. And that pissed me off. All right. And so I'm like,
Mac, I don't get to piss you off very often.
So, I know, but is that different because I've had that and I know that, so it's not really what you're talking about. What you're talking about is you come to a restaurant, you've never had this dish, you grab the salt shaker and you start shaking salt on it, and you've never even tasted it. Is that fair
that
or not fair?
I'm talking about. That is exactly what I'm talking about. You knew you were going to salt your mother's food because you've eaten it many times. That, I don't care. That is your call because you've tasted the food before.
Thank you. All right.
When I put a plate of food in front of someone. They've never had that food, and they just start piling on the salt before tasting it. It just makes me kind of crazy, that's all. But hey, you're paying for it. You're eating it. Knock yourself out.
Do you ever make a comment standing at the table? Hey, do you want to take a taste of that before you salt the hell out of my food? Do you ever take? Do you ever go there with anybody?
Yes, I have.
What do they say?
They look at you like you're from outer space.
Like, what do you mean?
And I say, just be respectful and taste the food. And if you don't like, if you need, it needs more salt, then knock yourself out. You salt it to taste. But, however, I just like people to try the food first. I've only done that a couple of times. Most of the time, it didn't turn out well. I was told to go mind my own business. I'm paying for it.
Oh, really?
And I certainly, this guy, yeah. I've been watching him for a while.
Oh, so you had your eye on him?
And, well, I see he comes in. I knew him personally. And it was more giving him some grief than just about anything else. But I just had to say it. I if I didn't know the guy, I'd keep my mouth shut. But I knew him. And so I just wanted to, I was feeling a little frisky, like I tend to do from time to time. And that's what came out. Oh, come on, man. Taste the food before you dump half a jar of salt. It was some kind of comment like that. This is 20 years ago, I think.
Was liquor involved in any of this at some point?
Not in my case.
Oh, you did it stone sober? Whoa, that's impressive.
Well, I think it was the first set, so I hadn't gotten into my first beer yet. So I try not to have any beer the first set. The second set, however, if it was there, I might have had one or two, maybe three beers before I went over to the table.
Listen to this. Hey, Mac, I know this chef is from North Dakota area, or at least has made his living up there for a while. That means he probably is familiar with cooking game. One of my favorite things to eat and to hunt is duck. Does he have a favorite duck recipe that he would recommend? Oh, my God. Stand by.
Yes, I do.
He's Mr. Duck. He should have like a Donald Duck head that he walks around in. Right? His duck is, what is it called? Roast caraway duck?
Roast caraway duck. It's a Czechoslovakian recipe that a woman from Czechoslovakia, from Prague, who was working in the restaurant doing prep when it opened, gave us this recipe. And you take a whole duck, and you clean it and stuff, and then pat it dry, and then you take salt, and you speaking of salt, and you sprinkle the inside of the cavity with salt completely. The outside, and then you take caraway seed, and you sprinkle the inside completely with caraway seed, and then the outside completely with caraway seed, then you put it in a baking pan with about 2-inch sides. You have an oven rack in the bottom of the pan that takes the duck about a quarter to a half an inch off the bottom of the pan so the fat renders, and you preheat your oven to 500 degrees.
500?
Listen to it. And you cook that at 500 degrees for 30 minutes. And that crisps the skin and starts rendering the fat, because as those of us who like duck know that there is a ton of fat in duck.
What does rendering mean?
Rendering means getting rid of the fat in the duck.
Okay.
And by having it on that raised rack, the fat will rip off. And then after you have 30 minutes at 500 degrees, you turn the oven down to 250.
Ooh.
And then you let it go for, depending on the size of the duck, usually ducks are 3 to 5 pounds each. And if it renders the fat slowly, and then you take in about 2 hours, you start checking it. And every hour after you turn the oven down, you take a spoon and you baste the turkey. I mean, baste the duck with the fat juice.
Okay.
And it drips over, and that keeps the skin moist. And when it's done, it's 2.5 to 3.5 hours. It's not rare, but it is moist and tender. And then I usually serve the half a duck. So I would have poultry shears, which are big scissors, but for poultry.
Right.
Cutting ducks and chickens and so on.
Right.
And I'd serve a half of them, a duck, and then I'd turn the broiler up before I served it, and I'd put it about 6 inches, 8 inches away from the broiler, just to crisp the skin, because, folks, duck skin, when it's crispy, is spectacular. It just is magnificent.
Wow.
And the duck's good, too. And then you serve that with sweet and sour red cabbage, which is your cabbage, and you can cook all this ahead. The cabbage, and you saute onions, apple, and bacon, and cabbage, and a little vinegar, and some water, and you cook it until it's fork tender, about, it could be a half an hour to an hour, depending on how high you have it. You start it out of the boil, and then you simmer it. And that goes with the duck. And we used to serve spätzle, which is a milk and flour dumpling that you have to look it up on the internet. There's a little machine, a spätzle machine, and you take this batter. You make it batter, like a pancake batter.
Right.
And then you rub it through these grates in this little funnel over boiling water. And then it sinks to the bottom, then it comes up and bubbles and puffs a little bit. And then you let that cook for about 5 minutes. Then you drain it, and you can refrigerate that. And then you pull it out, and you saute it with onion and butter. And then I used to put a little bit of grated Gruyere cheese, that's the Swiss cheese, over the top of it just before I served it, and melt in the spätzle. So you have duck, red, sweet and sour red cabbage with apples and bacon and onion in it, and then the spätzle that's cooked in butter, onion, and a little Gruyere cheese on the top, and that's what we used to serve with Sanders. And that is a very, very serious dish. And if you like to do duck, that is a great way. Now, you can also make an orange glaze duck l'orange in the French. And that's a whole different process and a whole other show.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But that roast caraway duck.
What is caraway? Is a spice?
Yes, it looks like a little rabbit turd.
Yikes.
Or mouse turd. Yeah. It's not very attractive. No, it's caraway is a dark seed that's very spicy, but you just coat it with salt and caraway seed. The salt helps render the fat, and when you taste it, it doesn't taste like all the salt you put on it. The oil in the bottom of the pan, I used to have a French kid who waited tables. He was going to aviation school. And he'd sit down there at the end of the night and grab a half a loaf of French bread and sit there and dunk it into this duck fat and eat it. So, yeah. But anyway, that is a recipe that we had on, we still have it on the menu at, it's called Ellie's Ivy, the former Sanders.
Oh, and really?
If I ever took that recipe off the menu, I would have had to go on witness protection program. I mean, it was that popular, and I would only do so many a night, and if people wanted a duck for sure, they would call in and reserve a duck, and I would write down. Sometimes we'd sell 4 to 6 whole ducks, so that's 8 to 12 portions of duck a night. And it's great for service because they're pre-cooked and they're in a warming oven with the prime rib to stay just temperature and not cook. And then I would take it out. I'd put it on a metal dish and stick it under the broiler and crisp the skin up and then saute the spatzle, which was pulled out of the fridge because it's already cooked, same with the red cabbage, and then dish it up. And we served it on pewter plates.
Pewter plates? Why pewter plates?
Yeah. Because that's just the way it was. We had them. We had a...
I didn't know if caraway with duck was on pewter was like doing tomato things in cast iron. I don't know if
you're not cooking on it. You're just serving it on it.
Right.
And that's no problem.
All right. So it's just a presentation thing.
Yes. You serve it on a white china plate, a glass plate, whatever you want. A clay plate, but that's just the way we did it when we opened up Sanders.
Right. Somebody sent me this story and asked me to have you comment on it, so I will. It's a story on ESPN. The headline reads, "Pizza Spitter Could Land in Jail for 4 Years." A young man who was fired from his job as a food vendor in the Detroit Tigers home stadium after video surfaced showing him spitting on a pizza has pled guilty in the case. Court records show that Jalen Curley entered the plea Wednesday to 1 felony count and 1 misdemeanor count of food law violations. The felony is punishable by up to 4 years behind bars. The 21-year-old sentencing is November 15th. The video appeared on Instagram, and the pizza was apparently intended for customers. Officials determined it was recorded at a game played in Tiger Stadium on September 21st. Curley was fired. Tests show he didn't have any communicable diseases. Any comment about that? Is that something you worry about? Obviously, if you hire the right people, I think you don't normally worry about stuff like that.
That's the right thing. I'm sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think it's deplorable. It grosses me out and pisses me off. It is a problem in the fast food industry. You have people working back there in those kitchens. They're minimum wage. They don't want to be where they are, but they have to get money.
Right.
And so they are either messing around and saying, this guy's Rudy. when he called in his order, he was an a-hole.
Right.
I'll take care of that. And they'll spit on his hamburger or pizza. Or, and that stuff happens more than we'd like to think. That's another reason why I've always, when I worked in Europe and Italy, we had an open kitchen. I like open kitchens because the customers can see what the hell's going on.
Yeah, what does an open kitchen mean?
It means that the cook line is not behind doors in a wall.
Right.
It's open. So a lot of places, like I did at Sanders, I had seats at the bar, at a counter or a bar area that overlooked the kitchen. A lot of restaurants will have a counter with high top seats where you can look in and watch the kitchen cook,
right,
talk with the chefs if they're so inclined, ask them questions, and I think it's a good way. And another reason I had an open kitchen is because you had to communicate civilly with the servers and the bartenders. There wasn't any door to start screaming at the waiters when they came in with order changes or special orders. I just like that it keeps everything more in the team mentality, that, you know, you can serve the best food in the world, or you can give the best food in the world to a waiter, but if he's rude or does something awful, you know, and the same with the cooks, they could do something awful to the food. And, you know, somebody comes in and says, has orders of steak, medium rare, and it comes out medium well, and they send it back to the kitchen. Well, you're taking a chance a lot of times, if it's a closed kitchen, to whether they're just going to throw it on the floor and rinse it off, and you just never know. I mean, it's just the way it is. I don't mean to be a doomsday or anything, but there are certain kitchens that don't give a damn. But it's who you hire, and it's the pride you have in the food you produce. And your customers, they're paying for the food. So if they want something different or it's not cooked to their liking, you redo it.
But I would think that's an attitude, though, that you imbue the kitchen. And I go back to, you know, me asking you, Kim had this dish that I loved called Mixed Seafood Grill. And it had scallops, crab cakes, scampi, a little bit of avocado, and garlic mashed potatoes.
And the fish of the day.
I asked Kim, instead of the fish of the day and scallops, could I just get a little piece of ribeye with this? And he didn't get mad at me, but he said, hey, listen, you can have anything you want here, okay? It's what I do, and you're the customer. But I think as customers, we don't feel that everywhere we go, right? could I have this and this? And Kim admonished me. He said, you can have whatever you want when you come in here. That's what I have to stress to my customers. So it's not something that most of us kind of grow up doing, but no, I won't forget that. That has to not only go from you, but your employees have to get it. That, hey, look, we do windows here. We go off the menu. It's something that, you know, we should be excited to do, but not everybody does that.
And it's something that I learned seriously when I was living in Port Townsend, Washington with the Blue Parrot, and I had, they filmed Golfers and Gentlemen in Port Townsend. So I had Lou Gossett, Deborah Winger, Richard Gere, all of those cats, that was a hell of an ensemble cast, would come in They take my menu, and they look at it, and they create their own dish. And I said, of course. And they look at you like you were going to come back at them. And all you do is, you know, especially with L.A. Movie people, they don't give a damn what it costs. And I always upcharge it. You want something special? And taking this and that from this dish and that dish? Absolutely, I can do that. But you're going to pay for it. And I didn't gouge him, but I did add a buck or two to the dish. But when you go into a restaurant and they're militant, no substitutes, you think about whether you want to eat there if you have any special order. You know, because they're going to throw a hissy fit because the server will say, well, I can check with the chef, and the chef will go ballistic on the server. And I've seen chefs come out and say, we don't do substitutes. We got a good menu. Eat what we got or go somewhere else. And that's where you get up and thank you very much. Or something else.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've seen that happen more than once. A lot.
Interesting. Yeah, I would think that it would be, you know, that more people would have your attitude. Because if at the end of the day, I want to make money, I want you to be a customer. And especially if you, and we're not talking being in the fast food business, all right? Like, could you, you know, could I get it without ketchup or without onion? We're talking about a restaurant, you know, and you know, wanting to build your client base. And I would think that most restaurants, but I would tell you, my experience is, you know, not that many restaurants are welcoming of that, which is a little bit surprising.
I think in today's world, I've even done that at fast food joints a few years ago when I was eating. I went into a McDonald's, and I didn't want a big boy. A Big Mac.
Big Mac.
I wanted it.
Whoa, where did that come from? I didn't want a big boy.
Yeah. I didn't want a Big Mac. I wanted a cheeseburger, double cheeseburger, with the secret sauce on it.
Oh.
And in Grand Forks, they did it. And no, not a peep out of
them. Really?
But that's a rarity.
So you got the two cheeseburger patties stacked on top of each other.
No, just a quarter pound, straight quarter pounder. This was years ago.
Okay, so you got a straight quarter pounder with the special sauce on the Big Mac.
That's it, baby.
Whoa.
And I didn't want the extra piece of bread.
Right.
You should be able to ask what you want if you're paying for it.
Watching your waistline, right? Getting that second piece of bread out of
there. Getting that third piece of bread out of the way. my precious big boy days are long gone, and my big back days, where I don't care how many pieces of bread, as long as there's a piece of meat between the slices.
That's funny. That's funny. Here's another one. Speaking of hot dishes, I'd be curious to hear the dish that the chef was going to talk about before Mac course corrected him and pointed him in the direction of a green bean dish. Yeah. So what dish were you going to? You were talking about substituting black beans for something?
Well, I was. Beth and I make our own baked beans.
Ooh.
But we use navy beans, black beans, garbanzo beans, kidney beans. Geez, what's the fifth one? it's escaping me right now. But we cook all those or open the cans, and then we'll saute at least half an onion, and And then you can saute a little bacon in there, too. Then you add your beans, your brown sugar, your, if you want hot sauce, I'd put sriracha sauce in there, and a little bit of water, because you don't want them dry, you want them loose, and then some ketchup also, and pepper, no salt, because bacon's got salt, the beans have salt in them. And I cook that, I bring it to a boil, then I simmer it for a half an hour. But before I bring it to a boil, I add sausage, like we have a butcher shop, L&M here, which Mike knows.
Yep.
And I'll buy a couple different types of sausages, like a hot Italian sausage and a sweet Italian sausage. And I'll boil those in beer, and then I'll brown them off in a skillet, so you get that crust on the casing. And then I'll dice them in like quarter inch rings, and I'll throw all that in the baked bean mix before I bring it to a boil. I stir it around, and then you get the fat from the sausages, and you can do any kind of sausages you want, kielbasa. It does not matter. It's what do you like to eat. And then you take that, and you make sure it's loose enough that it's not dry. You simmer it for about a half an hour after it comes to a boil, and so all the flavors are married. And then you put it in a this dish, baking dish, I would grease with a little bit of olive oil or Crisco. Not heavy, just so it's stuff doesn't stick to the side. And then you pour that out, and then you take your tater tots,
ooh,
and you build your tabletop, and then you put your grated cheese on top of that. You know, you can buy that three blend. You can buy an Italian blend or a Mexican blend, and you sprinkle that over the top. The beans and meat are already heated, and the tater tots are cooked. They're probably in a bag pre-cooked. All they needed to do is be heated up. So you can let them come to room temperature, and then you top that while the beans are cooking. You put it, and then you sprinkle the cheese, put it in the oven till the cheese melts, and there you have that's a one dish meal. It's got baked beans, it's got meat, it's got taters and cheese, and maybe three or four beers. And if you're really decadent, you can have some kind of hard roll with it to sop up the juices. And that's what I was going to say.
All right.
But that's a hardcore hot dish.
A hardcore hot dish.
It's hardcore hot dish, baked bean style. But you make it yourself. That's the fun part. And this is something that can, everything except the tater tots and the cheese, the bean could be done the day before. Just like chili, it's always better the second day because it has a chance to sit in the fridge.
Yeah, why is that? Why is that? I mean, you hear people say that constantly about Chinese food. It's certainly one dish that people say that about. What else is always better as leftovers? A lot of people will tell you turkey. I don't agree with that, but a lot of people will.
Leftover turkey, if you cut it thin, yeah. and make sandwiches with, you know, my favorite sandwich, a little dressing, a little cranberry sauce, mayonnaise, lettuce, good bread, thick bread.
Yeah.
And that'll put you in the front row too.
Yeah, I don't buy that with turkey. But a lot of people will tell you that, that there are foods that do lend themselves. They taste better when they the second time, provided you don't use the microwave. Okay.
Because you should heat the oven up and throw them in the oven or on the stovetop. Like say if it's some kind of Chinese dish that's. You got halfway through the kung pao chicken.
No.
That's great the second day. And you just throw that in the saute pan and heat it up with a little bit of water so you get the moisture in the dish. Otherwise, it could dry out. There you go.
Let me ask you a question about reheating rice. When you reheat rice, there's a Chinese restaurant near here called the Golden Dragon, which is awesome. And they make the best shrimp fried rice I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
What is there a secret to reheating rice? Should there be water in it?
Yes, Mac. Good call.
Thank you.
What you do is you take a saute pan that has a lid on it, and you heat heat it up
right.
with some water in it. So what it does, if you put the lid on the saute pan,
yes.
you start it on high for a minute or two, and then you turn it down to like medium low, and then that water will create steam, and it'll come up through the rice and bounce off the top of the lid and back down on the rice, and that's how you bring a rice dish back to life. But you don't use a microwave unless you like to eat rubber.
You know what? That's exactly what it tastes like too. Microwaved rice. It tastes like rubber. It's just something cold that just got heated. That's all it is.
But if you do it the correct way and with the moisture and the lid on top, because that, you know, the water kind of simmers, goes up, steams up,
right?
Steam rises. Hits the pan, comes back down on top of the rice, you stir it once, and then you go. You just thought, oh my God, I just got this delivered.
No, it's anyway, this rice is delicious. Another email. Mac, what does the chef think is the best baked potato? Now, don't be provincial to North Dakota. Is it a russet? Is it a red? Is it a what is your favorite type of potato to bake?
Well, I'm not saying I've eaten russets. I've eaten Yukon Golds. I've eaten Red Rivers, Idahos. What is your favorite potato? Mine happens to be a Red River Red because it's a little denser. And I eat the skin, and when I do a baked potato,
it's a Red River Red potato, and that has a denser yes. that has a denser skin.
No, the denser meat, not so much water in the potato.
I see.
But what is your favorite potato? In mine is a Red River. But I wasn't that before because until I met Bob Evenson and he was talking about reds and I always blew it off. I said, I know it's the best. What are you talking about? You don't know. and then I had a Red River potato when I came here in 85 and I said, oh good God almighty. I'm in the front row here. And it was just with a little butter on it and Salt and Pepper, the first one. And then, of course, you know, me and my expanded baked potato repertoire.
Oh, my God.
What we, you and I, like on a baked potato, it's not normal, probably. But, whatever your favorite spud is what you eat and you bake it. The key to that is to cook it on you put it on a piece of foil in the oven, and you rub it with oil, and then you salt it with sea salt. A coarser salt. Not the fine salt. Not table salt.
Right.
Not, whatever that salt is that everybody uses. But, Morton's table salt.
Kosher salt. You told me kosher salt, right?
Yeah, kosher salt, yes. And then you sprinkle that, and what that does, and you take a paring knife and you poke a hole in each end to let the steam out so the potato does not explode in the oven, because they will. And that's a bitch to clean up. I'm speaking from experience, folks.
I knew that.
I forgot. I was in a hurry. That skin gets crisp. Now, whatever you do, folks, this is one of my pet peeves with baked potatoes. Wrapping them with foil and throwing them in the oven.
Where does that come from then? Because, I mean...
It comes from restaurants that cook 50 potatoes at a time, and it keeps it warm. It also turns it into a moisture pit, because no room for the moisture to escape. And so you go into a lot of restaurants, they'll bring you your dish with the goddamn potato wrapped in the foil still.
I know.
On the plate. You've had it, I've had it, and you don't want to eat those kind of potatoes. You do not want to do those at home. If you want foil, you put the foil on a rack and sit them naked to the glorious heat to crisp the skin, and then you're in the front row.
Hmm. I wondered where the whole foil thing. So I guess it would only make sense if you're doing large numbers and need to preserve them. Because other than that, it's, I don't know, the way you've taught me with olive oil and then a kosher salt on the outside. I mean, the skin is absolutely delicious, and just another great part of the meal.
Yes, it is.
All right, sir. Well, that'll do it for today. You have any big plans for the weekend?
Yeah, we've got hockey on television today and tonight. Night and tomorrow.
There you go.
They played well, but they...
I heard, we're talking University of North Dakota hockey, and I heard they didn't play well. Kim is a fan, but I heard they did not play well. They did not play up to expectations, and so there's a little bit of soul searching going on right now in the program. What are we doing?
You and I both know, we've watched them for so many years, that they start out... Very seldom do they start out of the gate like a rocket.
But
by Christmas, they're burning on all cylinders, and they always have a new load of freshmen every year, and it's no different this year. And young players that were freshmen last year are learning their spots. They got to figure out the proper lines. I'll watch the Dodgers.
Oh, big game tonight. How are you feeling? Are you feeling Dodger lucky?
I'm trying to. I got my hat on now. I've got my Jackie Robinson shirt on. I wear it today. I haven't worn it yet. They're down. They're up 3-2, but they got two in Milwaukee. I didn't see the Houston Astros getting beat. I just didn't see that coming. But they didn't look good, and they weren't playing, they were playing hurt, and their pitching sucked.
Yeah, no, I mean, let me tell you, the Astros got beat by the Dodgers, the bottom third of the Red Sox lineup with two outs, and by their second, third, and fourth pitchers. Right.
Yeah.
That was not expected to happen. So, you know, tip of the hat to the Red Sox who outplayed them, and big production from guys who weren't supposed to play a big role. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for the visit. You have a good weekend.
You too, and you take care of yourself, and I love your family.
All right, buddy.
And thank you everyone for listening, and thanks for the questions.
There you have it. The Allmarine Radio head chef. The one and only Gunner, Mike Musselman, joins us next on a Friday edition of Allmarine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on Allmarine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on Allmarine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.